Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect us all, both locally and globally. And for this, the arts hour, I feature in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. The show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. This week, my special guest from the arts is renowned artist Emilia Kabakov of the artistic duo Ilya and Emilia Kabakov, who are regularly named among the top 10 living artists in the world. American curator, writer and painter Robert Storr considers Ilya and Emilia Kabakov to be the two most consequential artists to emerge from Russia since the 1920s. This is the first in a two-part series of interviews with Emilia Kabakov. Today we'll be talking about when she and Ilya first became aware of the power of art to affect us on a deep level, how they worked together, their early life in Russia, why they started creating total installations, and also about their wonderful art installation project with children around the world, the Ship of Tolerance. Earlier this year, I was fortunate to be in London during the first major museum exhibition in the UK of the Kabakov's work at Tate Modern, coinciding with the 100th anniversary this year of the Bolshevik Revolution. The exhibition called Not Everyone Will Be Taken Into the Future explores the Kabakov's pioneering place in the international story of conceptual art. It's a huge exhibition unfolding over 3,600 square feet at Tate Modern. I was so glad that I got to see it. It was incredibly moving exhibition to go to. Completely unexpected and wonderful treat. It includes paintings by Ilya, drawings, albums, architectural models and large installations. And the exhibition is currently moving to Russia, where it will be exhibited at the State Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg and the State Tretyakov Gallery in Moscow. You can imagine what an enormous task it is to reinstall the exhibition in a completely different space. I'll be talking to Emilia more in depth about this exhibition in the second part of the series. Ilya and Emilia Kabakov have worked together in the USA, where they live, since the late 1980s and are known for their complex, large-scale projects and immersive total installations. To date, together they have created nearly 200 of these total installations, which invite the viewer to become an active part of the work, considering the meaning of utopia, the place of the artist, power, hope, fear, escapism, fantasy, and much more. Both Ilya and Emilia received formal education in the arts in the Soviet Union. Ilya's background is in graphic design and painting, and his early work consisted of small paintings, drawings, and installations. Shunning becoming an official Soviet fine artist due to the limiting artistic scope mandated at that time, he worked as a children's book illustrator, at the same time creating artworks in private shown to a small community of fellow artists. A gifted pianist, Emilia studied music, Spanish language and literature, and after settling in New York, worked as a curator and art advisor. Having known each other growing up, Emilia and Ilya met again when Ilya moved to the USA, and they have been creating conceptual artworks together since 1989 and have been married since 1992. Leading art historian and expert on nonconformist Soviet art, Matthew Jesse Jackson, states, "The Kabakovs have an abiding commitment to the veneration of past cultural achievements, to harmony, to beauty, to monumental simplicity, to a profound desire to entice and please viewers rather than shock or alienate them. In this sense, the Kabakovs would no doubt be comfortable producing work from inside an art historical time machine, leaping from one period and place to another. And this is one of the reasons why an atmosphere of fantasy, timelessness and storytelling sometimes surround their art. That being said, the Kabakovs are also keenly aware that one does not choose the time and place of one's creativity. One inhabits a particular slice of earth at a particular moment. So the challenge, the drama, one might say, of the Kabakovs' art can be seen in the wrestling with the spirits of newness and transformation, spirits that have brought devastation and disorientation so often during the last century, while still recalling the past without disabling nostalgia. An art project that is dear to the Kabakovs' hearts and which I'll be talking to Amelia about during the show is the Ship of Tolerance. This is a conceptual piece which hundreds of local schoolchildren from different ethnic and social backgrounds in different cities around the world have participated in, with the hope that through the creative process they can learn about tolerance. I'm really grateful to Amelia for making the time to talk to me, as when she spoke to me, she was getting ready to leave for Russia to reinstall the Not Everyone Will Be Taken Into the Future exhibition, a truly daunting task with an exhibition of this size, complexity and quality. Let's hear some of our conversation. You and Ilya both grew up in the repressive and hyper-controlled environment of Soviet Russia. You've said that Ilya had a very hard childhood. I'm wondering when each of you first became aware of art and its power to affect us on a deep level.
Well, I think Ilya was drawing, as his mother told me, since he was born, probably. When he first saw the pencil, he started drawing. And in many cases, it practically saved his life because, you know, environment was difficult. Children was sometimes can be very mean, and they have to be evacuated during the war in a completely different surrounding and culture, religion. And he started, his mother, when he complained that boys beat him up, she said, try the way to fight, you know, to deal with it. Mm. And he started making drawings, and that saved him.
Mm.
I'm different. My background is music, mostly.
Yes.
I'm a pianist, and I play piano since I'm 3 years old. So probably I started playing before I was reflecting on my life or what I was surrounding. And then art come naturally after music. In a way, it's connected, visual and sound connected in my mind, and that's it.
Yes, yeah. I was going to ask you that about whether you feel music is a kind of, it has a visual language in a way as well.
For me, music is present everywhere. I just hear sounds, music, people's voices. I mean, it's always here. It's 24
yes.
hours.
Yes, yeah.
Hours. You know, for me, it's always in reality.
Right, yeah. I understand you and Ilya grew up in the same places. What age did you meet?
Well, we're not only born in the same place, we're actually the same family.
Mm.
He's a cousin of my mother, so I don't know how we met. We always knew each other. I know when I was aware of him, it was when he made me his first drawing. That's probably I was 7 years old.
Oh.
Then I remember when I was aware of him of growing up, I was 14.
Right.
When I was 15, I told his mother that I'm going to marry him.
Oh.
And she said, no, no, you don't, because you're such a spoiled child.
That's a bit mean.
Well, she was wrong.
Yes, yeah. What was the drawing of that he did for you?
He teach me how to make dolls, so there were faces.
Oh. And many years later, you and Ilya came together again in America and started making works together in 1988. You're known for your total installations where the observer becomes a participant in the work. What was the impetus to start creating total installations?
Probably not a complete satisfaction with the painting, because painting is a limited genre. It gives you possibility to look, but you're always outsider. And for us, it was very important, the experience for the viewer to be inside the painting. And inside the painting, it's actually the room. It has to surround you. So practically every installation is a painting. You just have to learn how to look at it.
Well, that's interesting.
Different experience.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it like that before. And then also you have the element of time can be involved if there's things happening in the installation sort of in the moment.
Yes, if it's correctly done, if it's strong enough to get the viewer engaged completely, then he loses the sense of time, the sense of space. He is somewhere in the painting. He is completely lost. He becomes a character who lives in this space. If you notice, if you've been in our installation, you notice that there is a story about character, but the character itself is never there. Because we leave the space for the viewer to occupy installation by himself.
So the viewer is kind of becoming the character when they enter the installation?
Yes, yes. It's like a theater. But in the difference is in theater you have actors and they're playing and you're still outsider. You may commiserate, but you're not there. In installation, you are the viewer, you are the actor, and in a way you are the outer.
Yes, yeah. I think sometimes to the general public, installations can be harder to understand than sculpture or painting. I mean, not when they're in them, but, you know, as an ideal of art, to appreciate that it is art. When you first were producing installations in America, they were not immediately valued. And I wondered, did this have any effect on your approach, or are you always as artists producing what you want regardless?
You know, let me disagree with you. When the first installation was done, and I was there, I went as a viewer. It had a very strong impact on the viewer because people actually, it was done for the viewer, and everybody found something inside. Everybody, I would say, identify with the character. For example, there was a man who flew into painting because he wants to escape from reality. And many people were standing in front of this and inside the room and thinking, it's me. I would fly into the painting because I don't like my life, or I don't like the government, or I don't like my family, or I simply don't like the situation when I'm right now. The man who flew into space. Of course, we're all trying to escape. It's about escapism from reality. And you can't find a person who, at one moment or another in his life, wouldn't wish at least that he find a way to escape. And this is the easiest way, because you escape into art, into dream, into music, into something different from what you have at the present moment.
That's a good point, actually. I think that when you actually go to the installation, or especially your installations, and you experience it, it's a different thing. But I think what I was meaning is sometimes it's hard for the general public to understand conceptual art as opposed to painting.
Conceptual art, yes, it's difficult. And sometimes even what we do as a painting, we try not to do installations which are not connected to the viewer or difficult to understand. And that's a special gift, I would say, a talent, because every time we do, we reflect on how the viewer and different levels of understanding of different viewers would understand the installation. For example, happened in California. We did installation with the albums, and it's like 10 different artists talking, each one telling the story of his life, and it's a visual drawing complimenting or explaining this idea.
Yeah.
The woman walked in and she said, oh, I have to buy one of the albums. I have to have it for my child because it's such a wonderful story to read to a child. The other come and say, I also would love to escape from life, and there are so many different ways to escape. And different opinions, and only one person, and that was art historian. He walked in and he said, "Oh my God, but this is a history of art," because every album was done like it was done by different artists,
right? Yes,
in different style,
right?
But nobody else didn't have this visual picture of history of art and couldn't immediately react,
right? And they didn't need, and they didn't need to have it to appreciate the work.
Yeah, it's not necessary to appreciate the work to be art critic or art historian or connoisseur of art. You just have to be a human being,
right?
Because it's already there. It's for you.
Yes, and obviously, as artists, you are trying to convey something with the work. But once the work's created, then you lose control to some degree of how people will receive it, because everybody interfaces with it in a different way.
Exactly, and that's why we say the viewer is always right. As many as viewers there are, everybody has a different opinion. Somebody can say, "I hate you," or "I hate your work," and, you know, he's right. He has the right to be it. It's a free, that's where freedom is. It's a free society.
Yes, yeah. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest, renowned conceptual artist, Emilia Kabakov of the artistic duo Ilya and Emilia Kabakov, regularly named among the top 10 living artists in the world. We're going to go to a break now, but I'll be back with more of my conversation with Emilia after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
No white horses to play the game, and I wish I knew your name. Something about you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, babe. It just goes nowhere. Well, we can do the things we want. We can do the things we like. But if we're taking all the time, well, I just don't think that it's right. Just that. I think that there's more to us than just that.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz has been an independent bookseller for over half a century in the community we love. Visit Bookshop Santa Cruz downtown. We love our customers and the books that make it all possible. Bookshop Santa Cruz, online and in downtown Santa Cruz.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest, world-famous artist Emilia Kabakov of the artistic duo Ilya and Emilia Kabakov. We heard from Bookshop Santa Cruz in the break, and I wanted to let you know they have a regular program of wonderful authors appearing to discuss and sign their books. And coming up on April 9th is Wakey Wang talking about her award-winning debut coming-of-age novel, Chemistry. Wakey Wang is a 2017 5 Under 35 honoree of the National Book Foundation. And with a PhD from Harvard and an MFA from Boston University, Wakey Wang has combined literature and science in an original, moving, amusing and insightful way. So April 9th is your chance to meet Wakey Wang and hear what inspired her. It's a free event at Bookshop Santa Cruz, 7 p.m. Monday, April 9th, if you're in this area. And then on April 12th, New York Times best-selling author Meg Wolitzer will be at Bookshop Santa Cruz with her new novel, The Female Persuasion, which is one of the buzziest books of the year. So find out what all the buzz is about and meet Meg in person, April 12th, 7 p.m., Bookshop Santa Cruz. Well, back to my guest this week, artist Emilia Kabakoff of art duo Elia and Emilia Kabakoff. And if you go to the show website, I'll be putting up a podcast page with photos of the Kabakoffs' work and links to their website, which is wonderful, has the full range of all their extensive body of work. And I will also include a link to The Ship of Tolerance, an amazingly inspiring art installation project with children around the world, which Emilia's going to be talking about a bit later in the show today. So go to itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can go to the guest page, click on the photo of Emilia Kabakoff, and you'll be able to see all these examples of their work and get the links. Well, let's hear some more of our conversation. I'm wondering what your process is for creating a work with Elia. Is it different for every work?
What do you mean?
I'm just wondering how it begins, you know, how you think of an idea and how then you go ahead with making it into how it ends up. You know, do you think, oh, this is a good idea, how shall we do it, shall we make this?
It depends. We discuss a lot of things, we talk a lot about painting. I would say that's completely his. Maybe it's started somewhere in our conversation or the book we recently discuss, or maybe the movie, or I don't know, politic, it could be anything. The pain in my leg or his, whatever. But he paint, I don't paint. And then we just, you know, talk about it. Then he start painting, then I come to look, and let's go on like this. Installation we just do together, so just, we never ever say what we do and how we work together.
Right, yes. Well, I think it's good to keep some things inscrutable, you know, because you don't want.
Well,
them.
It's like a marriage. Yes. If you start analyzing, you're gonna lose it. So better not.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's a very good point, and I think artistic process is particularly like that, you know, and it can be diluted also by sharing, you know, how it comes into being. Yeah, then you get an outside kind of interference.
Yeah, I would say like this. We are similar in many ways. We are very different in many ways. But somehow we just work together.
Yes.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
You can't explain a miracle.
Elia has said that one wants to have a conversation with a painting. One doesn't want it to be silent. I'm thinking that the same is true for an installation. How do you aim to create that conversation?
That I can't explain. Not every art can be explained, and I'm not sure it should be explained. I think people feel something when they walk in. We actually create a painting, the same like a painting. It has to talk to you.
Yes.
And the way it talks to you, it's getting you engaged. It's a provocation of something which is already you possess, your knowledge, your feelings, your emotions. Everything has to be there. And so artists have to be able to provoke the viewer to get his emotions and knowledge and talents come out at the moment when he look at the painting or sculpture or inside of being inside of installation.
Yeah,
that has to. This is difficult, but it's possible.
Yes. Yeah. Ilya has said that to survive the Soviet system, one had to have different personas for different situations, and that he was still living that way until you gave him the possibility to be who he really was. And this must be a tremendous gift to him. And I know you've said, you know, trying to analyze how you work together is not a great idea, but I'm wondering whether that's part of it, is that each of you are able to be truly who you are with each other, and that's how the work is able to be so incredible.
Probably, yes. But you see, we are slightly, we have like Ilya's older than me, 13 years.
Mm.
And that's make a big difference in our upbringing also. We have a different upbringing.
Mm.
He suffered through Stalinism.
Yeah.
Stalin time, his generation is afraid of power, afraid of government. My generation is 60s.
Mm.
So we more or less, you know, didn't experience the same thing they did. And I particularly understood when I was a child that nobody can do anything for you. They could kill you, but they can't break you if you don't let them break you.
Right.
So Ilya always said that I'm dangerous because I don't have a fear. I'm not afraid of anybody. Just it could be king, queen, it could be government, president. For me, it's a human being, and I'm talking to them on the same level like I would talk to a driver of a taxi or carpenter. Same. It's a human being. That's it. It's a person.
Yes.
And then that's a level I communicate.
Yes.
Because everything else is just position. It's nothing else.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's very hard to understand if you haven't lived under that kind of oppression and fear, what that is like and how it affects your life. Because it did break a lot of people, didn't it?
Of course, it's dangerous, it's scary. If you let yourself be scared, that's for the rest of your life. You never get out of this shell of fears. It surrounds you. It's breaking you, it restricts you. So in a way, when Ilya said I give him freedom, it's not that I give him physical freedom. I actually make him understand that, you know what, nobody can do anything to you. You're free to express yourself any way you want. There's no judgment.
Yes.
The final judgment will be probably made on your works 100 years from now. So just don't think about it.
Right.
Whatever you feel like doing, whatever you want to do, just start working.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. And I think also the amazing communication possibilities of art that can communicate on so many levels, it can really make you feel less alone in the world. And so I think that's a very powerful thing about art that can help in very difficult situations also.
You think art is better than internet? I was thinking internet gives you possibility to communicate all around the world. It's not that I disagree with you. I agree with you. But I think millions of people today think internet is a God-given freedom possibility.
I'm not sure that that's, well, in often in many cases, real communication. I think it's a sort of, I don't know, a simulated communication, because it's on such a shallow level in many instances. You know,
exactly. A real communication has always personal. And so your personal communication and relationship with art, with music, has to be personal. And the internet never gives you this possibility.
No.
It's very artificial.
No.
As you said, it's very shallow. It's in many cases, unless it's a close friend and you do know the person, but then you don't communicate probably through internet.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think it's dangerous in some ways, because people think that it's a real deep communication, and so you know they're losing the sense of what it means to do that. You know, because they have this sort of simulated deep communication.
It is dangerous because it gives you illusion that you have many friends, that you actually visible,
yes,
but you are not. And then suddenly when you discover that you are nobody and nobody really cares, because nobody really knows you, so nobody cares about you, it's dangerous for the person. They could commit suicide, they could get into depression. On many levels, it's more dangerous. It's something which is real.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, people feel so visible, but at the same time, they're not really seen in a psychological, emotional sense. You know, who they really are is not really seen, just whatever they put up that is visible to people. It's not a true perception of them.
I once said something which is maybe not nice to say, but I did say it to somebody. The person said to me, they don't like me. I said, you know what, you are not a prostitute. It's not possible for everybody to like you. And just don't try. And internet give you illusion exactly of this, that everybody likes you. There are thousands of people who look at you and like you. It's not so. It's better to have 3 people, 5 people around you, very close friends, who you know you can trust, you know they are your friends, and they really listen to you and hear you. Everybody else just click like it or whatever they do, and that's it. But they don't even read your, what you, or didn't look at your photographs, or didn't look what you are as a person. They can't. They don't have time. They have a thousand other people like you.
Yes, yeah. And I think also, you know, it's the same with art. You know, to be liked by everyone, that you or the artwork has to be so bland in order to be, you know, accessible to everybody, that it loses its whole meaning in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest, world-renowned conceptual artist Emilia Kabakoff of artistic duo Ilya and Emilia Kabakoff. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back right after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda Yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest this week, artist Emilia Kabakoff of art duo Elia and Emilia Kabakoff, who are regularly named among the top 10 living artists in the world, and whom American curator, writer, and painter Robert Storr considers to be the two most consequential artists to emerge from Russia since the 1920s. And just to remind you, if you go to the show website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, I'll be putting up a podcast page with photos of the Kabakoffs' work and links to their website, which is amazing. As I said earlier, it's got just so much on it. I really recommend visiting that. I'll also be putting up a link to the Ship of Tolerance, which is their inspiring art installation project with children around the world. And Amelia's going to be talking about that Ship of Tolerance project now. So let's hear what she has to say. You have a wonderful project, the Ship of Tolerance. It's been sailing since 2005 in various parts of the world, from Siwa, Egypt, Venice, New York, to Havana, San Moritz, to Sharjah, Arab Emirates, Rome, to Capalbio, carrying a message of solidarity among peoples, intercultural exchange and respect for differences. It's going to be in Germany in May, Italy in June, and you hope soon it will be in London and Chicago. I'm wondering if you can describe for listeners how the Ship of Tolerance is created. What is the process?
It started as a Jasper art project with children in Siwa, Egypt. But when we pay attention how children communicate without being able to, you know, talk because they didn't know language, and we have students from Manchester, England, and they play soccer, they, you know, make all kind of music together, drawings, but they can't talk. We understood that maybe culture is one of the main possibilities to bring people together. Without music and culture and visual art, without knowing language, without being of different cultures, different religion, they can't communicate. They have to have empathy. And empathy is possible if you know each other, if you personally have some kind of knowledge for other culture, other religion, other beliefs. Then if you know, you start respecting each other. And that's how the communication starts, on mutual respect and mutual knowledge. And we start with children because we believe that children's mind is not preset yet. Even the parents tell them something, they still have time to change their mind if you talk to them, if you explain them things. They have they're much more open-minded than kids when they are 15, 16, 17. And we start this project, we build the ship, we give them material, we have, during the drawing lessons, they actually discuss with teachers, with volunteers, all this different idea about tolerance. And, you know, you don't have to tell them about their sexuality or their religion. We just put it, think in general, how religion were created. Where are they connected? Where they went different ways. But it doesn't mean one is worse than the other. It's just a matter of different upbringing, different surrounding, different cultures. But by the end, we all have, like one little girl put it, but we all have one head, two hands, two legs, and one heart. Which is absolutely true. Doesn't matter what color we are, doesn't matter what religion, doesn't matter what culture, which part of the world we live, what are we? We're still human beings. And that's what makes us different, because we can communicate. So we have to use this ability to communicate. We did a lot of things. We brought first time American children to Cuba to play a concert together with Cubans and Russian children. We brought all of them together. It was not easy with the American government, State Department, but by then they understood that this is not a project about politics. Children have nothing to do with politics yet. And the same, we explained to Cuban government that, you know what, we don't care what politics you do, how your politics is different. What we want, and I believe you want the same, you want your children to be free, to be good, to be able to live the life they want, or not government want them to live.
Mm.
They obviously they understood, because we were allowed to do anything we want. And we actually work with all children there at Havana, not only special schools, but all of them.
Mm.
We going to do Chicago next year, and we always try to get all communities involved. In New York, we had more than 100 schools involved with Agnes Gunn
wow.
Foundation.
Mm.
It's a foundation which brings young artists to schools, and they teach children to draw. So during these drawing lessons, they actually were talking about tolerance, and they help us a lot. This way we got probably more than 5,000 kids,
wow.
maybe more.
Yeah.
And it's very, meaningful to them. In some cases, it changed life. For example, the boy who started with us in Italy, 2007, he was 3 years old.
Mm.
Now he's, I think, 15.
Mm.
He just called me and he said, okay, I'm now living in London. I heard you're going to do a project. Can I participate? I can go to school. I can talk to children.
Mm.
I truly believe in tolerance, and I want to be part of the project.
Mm.
We have one child in Miami. My granddaughter and my grandson grow up with this project.
Mm.
And I could tell you at least 50 kids. We're taking children from Ukraine. We're taking children from Russia. We're taking children from Iraq. Whatever we can do, we're doing this. And Cuban kids, which were with us traveling all around, now grown up, and he's a dancer. He's a very well-known dancer with Spanish company. So, you know, give them different perspective in life. Show them that they actually can do anything they want. There is no limit for you.
Mm.
As a child, you can change your life and you can change other people's life. That's what we're trying to explain. We changed the whole atmosphere in the Switzerland city of Zug. We built the ship. But before we built the ship, the program was done so well that the whole city participated.
Mm.
Nursing home. People in nursing home were making drawings. Children went for the concert to nursing home. Children with limited ability, and people with limited ability and homeless were building the ship.
Yes.
Actually, our campers teach them how to build the ship. During the opening, the whole city brought food outside, and everybody was eating. They stopped the traffic, and they put tables all around the city. We also created table of tolerance, and men only, Muslims, and, you know, local, were sitting at this table discussing how they could help refugees, because that was a big problem there.
Mm.
Local people didn't want to accept refugees.
Yes.
They're different on every level of life. And the first time they fight, then they start talking. By now, the city completely changed. And it's not I'm saying this. That was actually said by the mayor of the city at United Nations. He said, it's a different city right now. People try to help with the job, with the apartments. They let children play together. The atmosphere is so friendly. It never was like this before.
Yes, yeah.
So it does change. People.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think it's even more important now than ever, because, you know, and especially, you know, in America in particular, and what you were saying about the refugee crisis, there seems to be this impetus of trying to make everybody the same, that, you know, everybody's only okay if they're the same as we are, you know, if they believe
no,
the same.
It's impossible.
And, yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
There is a reason people are created differently, probably. There is a reason why they believe in different things. We are human, but that's the only thing which makes us similar. But everything else, you know, different conditions of life, different surroundings, different continents. But if people are in trouble, America always have empathy. That's a country which we can say we are Native Americans, except for Native Americans, but Indians, but they also probably come from somewhere.
Mm.
So we're all immigrants here.
Yes.
And I know better than anybody. That's why I brought my children here, because I could stay in Europe, but I believe that they will be free, and they will never feel like immigrants in America, only.
Yes.
Because my youngest daughter was born in Belgium, and I was offered to stay.
Yes. Yeah.
But I believe in this country. It's my home. I'm here for 45 years. You know, I believe that we overcome division, which is right now more or less is here.
Yes.
And we remember that we are not America. We're United States of America.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a big deal. Nobody in the world will have the same thing.
Yeah. And I think you're right. America does have that ideal, and I think we're in a moment right now where we're being challenged to stand up for that ideal, to not take it for granted, but to realize that it's a living thing that we have to keep honoring and creating for it to exist here.
And not by fighting, by conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
By dialogue. Fighting is never, ever bring good results.
No, I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. And so with the Ship of Tolerance, the children have the workshops, the discussions, then they create paintings, some of which are made into the sail of the ship, and the ship is built out of wood, and the public views it. It's about a 3 to 4 week process, I understand, for it to be made.
Sometimes for a year in Zug, it's permanent. They kept it.
Right.
They reinforce everything, and they decide to keep it as an artwork, but also as a reminder of tolerance.
Right.
So it
becomes
cities, kind of symbolic sculpture.
Yes. Yeah. And
right,
I think
now we're doing Rostock, and that's on a special request from the German government, because they have a lot of refugees and they have problems, and they ask us to do it. So for a year now, there is a program with children. I just few minutes before we start this conversation, I receive 800 drawings, images I have to select for the sale for the ship of the children. So they already made 800 drawings.
Oh, wow. And I think, when you're working with children, it's very few people can look at children and feel hate or prejudice. It's just once a person becomes an adult, somehow they can't see that sort of spirit or, commonality of humankind still, but I think working with children, as you say, they don't have the same preconceptions, but also people looking from the outside, I think it's inspiring for them to look at all those children of different backgrounds and see how they can be together.
Children always can be together unless adults tell them not to be together. They don't know the difference. They don't know who is what color.
Yes.
They see each other as another child. They
can
fight, they can play together. They really don't know the difference.
Yes. Why did you choose a ship to further the idea of tolerance?
At the beginning, it was before the plane, before the communication, which we have now, television, telephone. Mm. The ship was the main vessel which spread culture, was a vessel of communication.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Sailing between continents, between countries, bringing different culture, bringing knowledge of the other world, of the other continents, of the other tribes. So
It's a very powerful symbol.
Yeah, very powerful symbol.
Yeah. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And thanks again so much to my special guest this week, conceptual artist Emilia Kabakov of art duo Ilya and Emilia Kabakov. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is the first part of a two-part series of interviews with Emilia Kabakov. So do look out for the second part coming up in May, where we'll be talking about their latest exhibition, Not Everyone Will Be Taken Into the Future. And we'll also be talking about what utopia embodies for the Kabakovs, what painting offers that's different from installations, whether they think art should be life-affirming, if there's a spiritual aspect to their work, why they have a recurring use of the metaphor of flight and what that means for them, how much the context of an artwork matters in order for people to appreciate it and understand it, and much, much more. So I hope that you will look out for that, the second part coming up in May. And I really recommend checking out their website and the Ship of Tolerance website. I'll put links to both of these on the podcast page for this show, as I mentioned earlier, as well as photos of their work and the Ship of Tolerance itself, and the audio, of course. So if you want to tell your friends about this interview, or if you want to listen to it again yourself, if you go to itsaquestionofbalance.com and then the guest page and click on Emilia's photo, it will take you to the podcast page. And if you want their websites directly, it's ilia-emilia-kabakov.com, and the other one is the Ship of Tolerance, sorry, just shipoftolerance.com, but the easiest thing probably is to go to the show website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, and you'll find all the information there. You can just click on the links. Well, I just wanted to remind you again about Bookshop Santa Cruz's wonderful regular program of authors coming up on April 9th is Wakey Wang talking about her award-winning debut coming-of-age novel, Chemistry. And Wakey Wang is the 2017 Five Under Five honoree, one of the honorees of the National Book Foundation. And she has a PhD from Harvard and MFA from Boston, and she's combined literature and science in a very original, amusing and insightful way. So April 9th is your chance to meet Wakey Wang and to hear what inspired her book, Chemistry. It's a free event at Bookshop Santa Cruz, as is April 12th. New York Times bestselling author Meg Wolitzer will be at Bookshop Santa Cruz with her new novel, The Female Persuasion. So that's April 12th. And then on April 17th, Bookshop Santa Cruz is pleased to present New York Times bestselling author Janine Roth for a book discussion and signing of her book, This Messy, Magnificent Life, A Field Guide, which is an inspiring personal and often spiritual reflections on how women can find peace, make wise choices, practice everyday joy, and step into their power. So it's a great event for women and for men who want to inspire the women in their lives, perhaps. So that's on April 17th, Janine Roth, This Messy, Magnificent Life, A Field Guide. Seems quite an ambitious project there, Field Guide for Life. But anyway, if you go along on April 17th, you will be able to find out all about that. And just to remind you that It's a Question of Balance has a topic hour and a guest hour. And if you go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, there's two tabs at the top, topics and guests, and you can go there and see very easily all the different topics that we've had, all the wonderful guests that we've had. And if you click on the photos, it takes you through to the podcast page. You can then hear the audio and check out all the photos and links, etc. So I hope that you might do that. It's a question of balance.com. Thanks again very much for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time.